Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win!
Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in. Wednesday edition of the Hoosier Report underway here on the Big X Sports Radio. Glad you're with us. We do this every day, 11 a.m., complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective. Let's get right to it today. Middle of the week, IU off until Saturday. Some opportunity for them to maybe rest a little bit. It's college finals time this time of year, so maybe a little less practice for a few days, but an opportunity later in the week to really gear up for a big game with Butler that has some implications within Indiana high major basketball. A really neat event Saturday at the Crossroads Classic. So we'll obviously talk about that. Our guest lineup today presented by Honey-Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, we've got our Hoosier headlines, our news of the day presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Ton of notes to get to today. I want to talk a little bit about Rob Phinisee. Cliff Marshall yesterday tweeting out a photo of his body improvement, muscle improvement, just unbelievable the progress that he has made from a senior in high school to now a freshman that is entering the middle part of December. Also some Romeo Langford stuff. Michigan up to number two in the country. First Bracketology was out from Joe Lunardi, the original guy from ESPN. Indiana with a pretty good seed, and we'll talk some recruiting updates as well with Anthony Leal and Christian Lander. We'll do all of that in the first segment. Later in the program, segment two, we'll have an extended chat with Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com. We'll get ready for IU Butler. We'll talk some other things with this IU team as well. Never a shortage of IU stuff to talk about. Break down the team, break down individual players, talk about ideas and plans for this team for the future. And, of course, big game coming up. It's really, I said this yesterday, the last big non-conference game before Indiana has two lesser opponents, and then it's the start of the Big Ten conference season. And, by the way, speaking of the Big Ten, I know we've kept you posted, and I know there's plenty of things out there, and you can obviously read for yourself and see the number of Big Ten teams that are continuing to be ranked in the top 25 and the number of Big Ten teams that are getting votes in the top 25 that might be just outside of that. But the first net ratings from the NCAA, the new tool they're going to use, the selection committee will use to help formulate seeds and draft teams into the NCAA tournament, it was released yesterday morning. And I tell you what, the Big Ten, not only a number of teams in the top 25 based on voters, but a number of teams in the top 20 of the NET evaluation tool ratings that the NCAA has come up with to kind of replace the old RPI factor. So the Big Ten's solid. There's no way to get around that. And Indiana is thankful to get those two wins early in the year, I'm sure, because their start to the Big Ten schedule is very challenging. There are some of the tougher opponents. There are some games on the road. It's a really tough stretch to get going. So it seems like every year, and I'm sure this is true for every team, there's always that one stretch you point to when you look at the conference schedule. And I'm talking about from January on, not these new or early conference games. And Indiana's at times, I can remember it coming in the middle of the conference, late in the conference. But really, this start to the conference for them is going to be a very tough challenge, especially now that we know more about the teams and the players in the conference and that the Big Ten is really good this year. So we'll talk some about that as well. That's a look at the guest lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. You can mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. You'll get $1 off your box lunch at Honey Baked Ham. That's in New Albany. Let's take a look at some Hoosier headlines. Our news of the day presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. And I retweeted this earlier, at least I think I did. If you follow Coach Cliff Marshall, the strength and conditioning coach, the athletic performance coach, whatever the correct title is for him at Indiana, we've bragged about him. He's done a great job, especially in the offseason, keeping us all updated on the progress of some of the players off the court. And really, when you don't have a lot of news and you don't have any games and there's not practices going on and there's not things to talk about in season, a guy like Cliff Marshall and all the work he's doing in that offseason, his updates are really interesting. And the fact that he shares it a lot of it with the public has made him kind of even a more known figure, even though in today's college basketball world, there's no question that strength and conditioning and athletic performance coaches are on the benches now. They're much more involved with the team and the games and much more of known figures around the game of college basketball. But he tweeted out, Cliff Marshall tweeted out a photo yesterday of Rob Phinisee, and it's a picture on the left of him as a senior. I guess it would be going into his senior year. He's got an Indiana Elite uniform on, and perhaps it's his junior year. I don't know for sure, but it's obviously a younger photo of him within the last year, year and a half, maybe 2 years. And on the right side, it's a picture of Rob in his IU jersey, and the transformation is completely unbelievable. And from a high school body that you see on a lot of players, bench warmers, good players, stars, and an unbelievably chiseled body that looks somewhat ready to play Big Ten basketball as a freshman, the transition there, whether it was from right before his senior year or right before his junior year, still an impressive accomplishment for Rob, and obviously a lot of that work has been done under the guidance of Cliff Marshall. So I point that out because we get in the season, we start talking about the players and the teams, and we kind of get away from talking about some of the off-the-court things, but Cliff Marshall and his impact continues to be very big on this team at Indiana. I don't think there's any question about that. Also, I retweeted this as well. If you follow me, you might see it from Rick Bozich of WDRB. Just an absolutely great read from Rick, who's one of the best. The title is Romeo Langford, As Good as Expected for Indiana. You can read it at WDRB.com. But just a great kind of, I don't want to call it mid-season because we're not to that point, near that point yet, but a great maybe early season or mid-December update on Romeo. Talks about what he's done statistically for this team, what he's done as far as momentum for this team. Just a really good read on Romeo Langford at this point of the season that kind of summarizes his impact at Indiana and Bloomington, and really I think makes you think about in outside ways and other ways that you don't immediately think about with Romeo, how important his impact on the team has been through this early part of the season. And the great thing is, as we always say, I think the best is yet to come as far as his IU time, whether it's the 1 year, as a lot of people expect or not. I don't think we've near seen the best of Romeo Langford in an IU uniform. I think what we've seen has been great. He obviously has been a huge part of this team so far, but I still think some of his best performances are still forthcoming once we get into the conference season and later on in the year. New AP poll out yesterday. Michigan is up there high. I noticed in the KenPom ratings, which I really enjoy looking at, they are number 2. That's the highest that they have ever been since KenPom has really been out. And I think back in 13 was when they were that high. So that tells you that Michigan in the AP poll, Michigan in the KenPom, voters, statistical-based stuff, they're really good, and I don't think there's any question about it as we square up and get ready to head into the back half of December and, of course, restart Big Ten Conference play in January. I think you've got to give a hat tip to Michigan as the front runner in the Big Ten Conference at this point. Like Indiana, they've got 2 wins under their belt. Of course, one came against Purdue. I forget the other Big Ten win thus far for Michigan, but I don't have any question that they have the best opportunity from what I have seen to win the Big Ten, to be at the top of the Big Ten Conference. I think you could argue Michigan State, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Indiana in some order in that next grouping. But I really feel like, at least through the non-conference season so far and the 2 early conference games, that Michigan has maybe set themselves forward from the other teams. And I think that the ratings, both against statistical-based ratings and voter-based ratings, are showing that they are one of the best teams in college basketball. I've seen them mention a couple times early on as Final Four contenders based on their performances so far. So we'll see. But Michigan, I really like. I think they will be at the top of the Big Ten. We'll see if Indiana can match them this season. Bracketology out. I mentioned this at the top of the show. Joe Lunardi, he's like the original guy that did bracketology for ESPN back before everybody was trying to do it, and still does a great job. Indiana, a number 5 seed in the first ESPN bracketology out for this 2018-19 season. That's pretty good for a team that has lost two games and is beginning to find itself and play really well despite some injuries. Definitely, I think Indiana fans would be very pleased to get in the tournament, very pleased with the 5 seed, but perhaps the ceiling is it higher for this team? Can they garner a better seed in the NCAA tournament? I think a lot of people would probably bet that they could, based on Romeo and Juwan and some of the other factors this team has. Obviously, still a long way from that, but Indiana, a number 5 seed in the first bracketology, that is out of the season. Also, a couple recruiting things today. We've been so busy with the season and all the games and everything going on with high school stuff. I want to kind of update a couple players. I saw yesterday Bloomington South junior Anthony Leal tweeted out that he got a scholarship offer from Stanford. He now has a number of high major scholarship offers. And I know there were some of you that I ran into that I've talked with since the New Albany-Bloomington South game early in the year. And I know Floyd Central plays at Bloomington South coming up very soon. But a number of the local fans said, hey, you know, we weren't quite sure about Leal when he played at New Albany. He looked like a good player, but is he a Big Ten caliber player? Can he play at Indiana? Is he a top-level recruit in the state for that class? And I think that it's still likely Indiana will offer him. It may be later into this year or later into the summer, coming up here with the travel ball and all that once the high school season begins. But he has really stepped it up in the last couple games. Bloomington South had a really tough start to the season, but I know he had 25 points at the end of November in a game where Archie Miller was there and watched him up close and personal. And then over the weekend, Bloomington South defeated Southport, and he had a career-high 38 points and 13 rebounds in that game. So he's beginning to maybe click a little more, fit into the Bloomington South offense, become their top option, as I think a lot of people thought he might. We'll see how he does against Floyd Central. That'll be a good challenge because of Floyd Central's ability to play defense and possibly to have a long, tall player that can guard him respectably. But I think Leal is somebody still to keep an eye on, and it would not surprise me down the road a bit, maybe late in the high school season, maybe into the spring and summer months of AAU and travel basketball. I still think that very possible, very likely, given he's a Bloomington kid, given other Big Ten schools have already offered, given the way that Indiana has watched him so far this high school season, I think it's very possible that down the road he gets a scholarship offer from the Hoosiers later this year. Also, one other note, Christian Lander of Evansville Wrights, the 2021 guard, a sophomore for the Wrights Panthers, received another offer. Kansas State, the most recent school to offer him. He has a number of high major offers. Of course, Indiana, Louisville, both right there on him. It'll be interesting to see how he develops. Big year for him. First opportunity to see him was a freshman a year ago. They came up to New Albany. Wrights plays a lot of the local teams as well, so will be interesting to see how he matches up this year against some of our local teams. But definitely somebody that is turning heads and catching the attention of college coaches. His scholarship offer started with small mid-majors, local to the Midwest, local to Indiana, and it quickly exploded into some Big Ten offers and some high major offers from elsewhere outside of the Big Ten Conference in the Midwest as well. So definitely someone to really pay close attention to if you're looking toward younger players in the state of Indiana to get out and watch in this high school basketball season. One other note, don't want to leave this one out. Last week we talked about the Silver Anniversary teams with three local boys, men from the high school basketball glory days, named to the Silver Anniversary team for this year. Hall of Fame announced for the women yesterday, and we have a local person being inducted on the Women's Hall of Fame in Newcastle, Charlestown. Former standout Abby Conklin, she was inducted or will be inducted into the Hall of Fame at a banquet that takes place in Indianapolis for the women's side of things on April 27th of 2019. She was Miss Basketball in 1993, an Indiana All-Star Mental Attitude Award winner, an All-American Gatorade Player of the Year. And get this, she averaged 36.6 points per game as a senior, which was an IHSA record of points scored, 2,616 career points. Unbelievable girls basketball player. Sometimes I don't know that we realize how many talented, especially even on the girls' side, players like Abby Conklin, like Sarah Nord, that we've had come out of the area go on to be a Miss Basketball in the state of Indiana. But great to see Abby Conklin recognized as Indiana, an inductee to the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, the Women's Hall of Fame coming up in 2019. She will be part of the 2019 class. That's a look at the headlines presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Hoopsters is your hometown sports grill where hometown fans watch hometown teams play. Hoopsters was voted as best sports bar and best place to watch sports by the News and Tribune's Reader's Choice Awards. Hoopsters in Jeffersonville, where fun happens. We'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com. Lots of IU basketball stuff. We'll look at IU Butler as well. A little recruiting, too, coming up next right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
All right, we're back on this Wednesday program. Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com is with us. And, Jeff, it's been a couple weeks, and I always enjoy hearing your take on things. So a couple big things that have happened with IU basketball: a win over Louisville on Saturday, and Trace Jackson Davis now officially in the fold as a member of the 2019 recruiting class for Archie Miller and the Indiana Hoosiers. Your thoughts on both of those, I think, big-ticket items for the program?
Yeah, well, as far as Trace Jackson Davis goes, that is a really significant recruiting win. It's obviously one of the players that Archie and his staff identified right away in the days after they were hired. And they put on very strong recruitment, and they ended up getting him. You know, they made a really big point to be first in a number of things. For example, Archie Miller was the only head coach at Trace Jackson Davis' junior year season opener. They were the first school in his senior year for ball open gyms. They were the first school to do an in-home visit with him and his family. So it was a very, very focused recruitment, and one that you know, was really, really important for Indiana, and one that I think, you know, I thought since about April, I had the feeling that Trace Jackson Davis knew where he wanted to go, that he was just going to kind of go through the process a little bit, take some visits, and make sure that he had things to compare IU to. But that was really big. And then obviously, you know, Indiana continuing to win on the court is really good as well. I thought what they've shown is they're learning how to, you know, gut out some games, and they're learning how to make the key plays you have to make in games decided by 5 points or less, basically games that are, you know, under two possessions. And that's really part of the development of a team is, you know, if it's close, if they're behind, do they know how to actually make the plays that are necessary? I think they've shown that they can get key stops, and they've shown that they can get key baskets in the final four-minute segment or under four-minute segment of a game. And those are things that sort of speak to program stability. And that's about teaching, that's about coaching, that's about a system, that's about what do you emphasize in practice. So I think the fact that they can figure out how to win games when you don't always play well is really instructive. And the fact that they've been able to figure out how to win games when, I think, up until a few days before the Louisville game, there'd been a stretch of, like, I think it was 11 or 12 days where they weren't even able to have a full practice as far as 5-on-5 scholarship players because multiple guys had been injured and out. And so if you can't even really practice, you can't even really work on development. And then Archie Miller even mentioned there was some slippage on offense, which I think that was very observable watching the team play. But when you have those issues and you're still able to grind out some wins, get a Big Ten win at Penn State, get a win over a very good Louisville program, a Louisville program that has beaten Michigan State already this year, I thought that was pretty telling overall.
Jeff Rabjohns, Pigs.com, is with us. And, Jeff, I'm curious, Jawan Morgan, you know, we know his game. He came back for his senior year. He obviously is someone that has meant a lot to Indiana, and especially been a lot to Indiana since Archie Miller has been the coach in his junior and senior seasons. How do you think his game has, I don't want to say changed, but maybe been modified or been assisted a bit by the addition of Romeo Langford, which makes him not always have to be the lone target for other teams.
Yeah, I think both those two have really helped each other because both guys are definitely capable scorers. So the other team has to pay attention to both of them. And one of the things that's really benefited Juwan is Romeo's ability to drive, because Romeo's a really big threat on his drives when he turns the corner. The other thing is, just by Romeo's presence on the court, the other team has to really pay attention to Romeo, and that gives Juwan some opportunities for some catch-and-shoot situations, for some drives, and just it gives him a little bit more space to operate in. Because last year, you know, I really had to do some stuff, I don't want to say smoke and mirrors, but they really had to do some stuff as far as trying to decoy different guys and trying to fool a defense into thinking you're trying to get so-and-so open on the wing or on the corner or some other action and get a defender to come around a screen so that Juwan could maybe catch the ball and be moving toward the basket. So it was a little bit of misdirection action. And now you can do one thing just a little more straightforward because you can put Romeo certain places, put Juwan certain places, and those guys have to be defended wherever you put them on the court. And then you throw in on top of that a little bit, you know, you got some guys like Al Durham starting to hit some shots, Robert Fennessy playing really well at point. And it just kind of makes things a little more natural for both guys. But, yeah, there's no doubt that Romeo's presence on the court has certainly helped Juwan over the course of the season.
Talking with Jeff Rabjohn, speaks.com, just kind of getting a early season update here with you. Maybe your vote for most improved player or two on this Indiana roster as far as returning players coming back from last year that have impressed you, that you think once the team gets into Big Ten conference play have shown they are ready for minutes and ready to maybe contribute in ways they didn't last year?
I would probably say, I think Al Durham, I think right now would be most improved over last year of the returnees. He's averaging a little under 10 points per game now. He's making more than 40% of his threes, which is a big jump from last year. I think his defense has remained very solid, so that's been certainly a help. So I would say right now he would probably be the guy that I would look at as the most improved guy over last year of the returning guys.
Jeff Rabjohn, speaks.com. For this team, as you look ahead to conference play, obviously I don't think anything is going to be easy in the Big Ten, and we'll talk about maybe the conference and your thoughts on that some here in just a moment. But, you know, it seems like every year you can look at the Big Ten schedule from the onset of the season and say, okay, we still don't know a lot about this team yet, but this part's going to be a tough stretch, or this 7-day period's going to be a really tough stretch, or the close of the conference is going to be very difficult based on what we know about Indiana, what we think about other teams in the conference. When I look at this conference schedule this year, at least going from January forward, to me the early part is what stands out as a real trying time for Indiana, and going to be interesting to see how they're able to handle some of those tough road games and tougher Big Ten teams really right out of the gate in early January.
Yeah, I mean, I think the conference as a whole is really strong. And I think that's, you know, you can look at how teams have played, some of the wins they've gotten. They dominated the Gavitt games, went 7-7 in the Big Ten ACC Challenge, even though there were some games that were clearly games where the ACC had advantages as far as their top teams played teams that are probably going to be lower in the Big Ten standings in home ACC venues. But the Big Ten did really well in that. They've done really well in some other settings. And you have a team up there in Michigan that is clearly playing as one of the best teams in the country. And I don't think there's really any question that Michigan right now is a top five team in the country based upon how they're playing, their results to date. But the conference overall, you know, you look at it and you're talking about 8 teams in the top 28 of the KenPom rankings. That's a big number. That's a high percentage of your conference is top 30 in the country. So it's going to be really, really difficult. And certainly, I think January is the toughest month for Indiana with the number of road games that it has, the places it has to go. So it's going to be really tough. And that's something that part of this whole schedule this year, there really aren't any breathers for IU. There were a couple games here and there, UT Arlington, teams like that, that you say, okay, those are home games that IU should definitely win. But with as many players as IU had out leading into UT Arlington, leading into UC Davis, you know, those games turned out to be more of a fight than I think you would have anticipated had IU been at full strength. So now you're going to Crossroads Classic Week. Then you've got a little bit before Christmas. And then you get really, really into the tough month of January. So it's going to be a tough season. It's really going to be a battle. And part of it's going to be IU has to play well. Part of it is they're going to have to make sure that when they face adversity, one loss doesn't turn into two. They're going to need to be able to kind of handle the fatigue that comes along. Archie Miller's going to have to like taper some things in practice. You can't do the old school thing of just beat guys up in practice anymore and expect them to be fresh from multiple Big Ten road games in the same week. So there's going to be an awful lot to manage. But, yeah, January is definitely going to be the toughest stretch, I think, based upon the way the schedule looks, based upon the number of road games. I think that's going to be the toughest month for Indiana during this 2018-19 season.
And, Jeff, talking about getting this Indiana team healthy to compete in that Big Ten slate beginning on January 3rd, I know that a break between Louisville and Butler from Saturday to Saturday is nice, but you forget that college finals going on early this week, so probably some opportunities where Coach Miller would love to practice, love to work on some things, but going to give rest days because of, I would think, studying and making sure that they get the grades they need to get. So some of that week, some of this off week will be lost to that, or I shouldn't say off week, but some of this lack of games this week will be lost to finals and things like that. But a nice break does exist between the game against Jacksonville, home game on December 22nd, and the January 3rd opener in the Big Ten, or I should say reopener in the Big Ten against Illinois. That will be, I'm sure, a very welcome break for this team to try to get guys not only healthy, but maybe closer back to full strength as they get ready to go into conference play for the rest of the way.
Yeah, that's a really good break because they have that Jacksonville game, like you said, December 22nd, and the next game is until January 3rd when they host Illinois. So there is going to be a chance for guys to actually get home, see their families around the holidays, then come back and get back to practice, get back to work. But that should be a good stretch. But you make a good point about finals week. I think people forget that, you know, these guys are actually college students. They do have finals. There's a lot involved in finals, as we all recall from going through it. So this is a week where there's a basketball focus that's important, but there's also an academic focus in a really, really important week as well.
We're talking with Jeff Rabjohns, Pigs.com. Jeff is with us Wednesdays on the program, and a lot of stuff to get to with him today. Butler coming up. That obviously is an important game. It's an in-state school. It's part of the Crossroads Classic. There's a little pride in the Hoosier State on the line for all of the teams that will compete in this event on Saturday at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Your early look at IU Butler. We talked some about the game yesterday. I really feel like Indiana playing well and is the favorite going into this game, but your thoughts on how the Hoosiers match up with another solid Butler Bulldogs team?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting based upon like how they played so far. Indiana's 25th, Butler's 26th in the KenPom rankings. Indiana's a little better defensively. Butler's a little better offensively. Butler's coming off a really nice offensive performance. They put up 95 points against the Northern Illinois team that they beat 95-68. They set season highs in made threes with 17. And that's one of the things that you definitely have to handle with when you play against Butler is their potential to go out there and make threes. Because they really can go out there and get them in bunches. Paul Jorgensen has been their best scorer. Jorgensen and Kamar Baldwin have been 1-2 in scoring each game throughout the season. Sean McDermott has also been shooting the ball pretty well throughout the course of the season. He's over 42% from three. Jorgensen's over 43% from three. So those are the main guys you really look at. And then they've got a couple guys coming off the bench who you know, definitely have the capability of making threes. Kamar Baldwin is maybe the outside of guys who are just straight-up three-point shooters. I think Baldwin is the guy you look at and say he's probably a really key focus for IU. 6'1", junior guard, is capable of making shots, capable of scoring on the move. So he's a guy that you have to deal with. And then you got Joey Brunk on the inside, obviously a Southport High School graduate, played alongside Paul Scruggs, who's now over at Xavier. So Joey Brunk's a guy who's played with and against good competition for a while now. And then there's some other guys off the bench you look at, you know, who, again, have been solid. But I think those are the Jorgensen, Baldwin, McDermott, Brunk. Those are the main guys. You know, Henry Badley as well is probably in that mix too. But those main guys are the really key guys. You got to focus on it to get a handle. You got to handle the three-point shooting. You got to make sure that Brunk doesn't go off inside. And you got to handle Kamar Baldwin and his quickness and his ability to make plays. And you also got to remember that Baldwin can go inside and get rebounds. He's really interesting that, you know, as a guard, he's averaging 4.6 assists per game and also 6.1 rebounds per game. So he's capable of going inside and functioning as well. But those are the main guys that you look at as far as what do you have to deal with when you face Butler.
Crossroads Classic has been an event that over the years has received lots of praise. Other people wish Indiana would exit that stage so maybe they could play in one of the bigger, more national college basketball showcase games, maybe at Madison Square Garden or somewhere else. As an Indiana guy like you are, and I am as well, it's always great to see Indiana teams play each other. I even love, and we've talked about this some before, but I even love when Indiana and Purdue and Butler play mid-major schools in the state, give the Valpos at Evansville's and everyone in between a chance to play in a big environment, in a big game that's meaningful for their fan bases and alumni. So obviously with this event at Bankers Life Fieldhouse on a neutral court with Butler and Purdue and others there on a rotating basis, it's great to see, I think, there always be a matchup with IU and Butler or IU and another big, high major, I guess is the term I'm looking for, college opponent in that event. I'm curious your thoughts on the event, and has it run its course, as some people say, or do you still see the value of kind of protecting the game of basketball and the best college teams in Indiana by getting them together and having some pride among each other in the state?
There's definitely a lot of value still left to the Crossroads Classic. When you bring together the four big schools from the state of Indiana, you give them the showcase. The state showcase, Bankers Life Fieldhouse, downtown Indianapolis for a day. And you allow people in the state capitol and anybody who wants to make the drive to watch the four big dogs in the state. Now, it's definitely an event that has a lot of value. And one of the questions that some people have from an IU perspective is, IU fans represent usually more than half the crowd. Depending upon how good IU is in a given year, sometimes it's well more than half the crowd. And with the revenues being split, some people say, okay, well, why should IU help subsidize other schools around state? Very valid question. And it's a question that I've even sort of tossed out at times when people have said, what do you think? I'm like, well, you know, here's something from the IU perspective that's worth a thought. Because by playing in this event, it's a date on the calendar. It's a marquee Saturday in December. It takes away an opportunity to be part of maybe one of the one-day showcases, you know, national level of events. Whether you're talking the CBS event, the Champions Classic, what have you. It's a date on the calendar that is locked in for IU and prevents them from being a part of something bigger. And obviously with IU's brand, they're a team that nationally TV looks at and wants. And I think, you know, there's all kinds of ways to describe brand, but look at what ESPN has done with Indiana the past few years in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. They put them against the two marquee brand names in the ACC, against North Carolina and Duke. And even in years when Carolina and Duke were much higher ranked than Indiana in the preseason poll, when if you looked at the ACC preseason predictions, Big Ten preseason predictions, you know, you didn't have, you know, Duke won in the ACC, Indiana won in the Big Ten. So obviously they're going on what? They're going on brand. And that's what Indiana has. They have a big basketball brand. They have a big basketball fan base that translates to what? Butts in the seats and eyeballs watching TV. So, you know, yeah, sometimes you'll have some Butler people say that, you know, well, Butler's won more NCAA tournament games in the last X number of years than IU has. Yep, true. Absolutely. That's what we call a fact. It also doesn't have anything to do with brand. Butler has no brand close to what IU basketball is when it comes to TV. And you can look at, that's not opinion. You can look at TV ratings, all kinds of things. That's just a basic observation. The IU brand is bigger than Purdue. It's bigger than Notre Dame basketball. That's just the reality of the situation. Other schools have had really, really good seasons. You know, Purdue won 30 games last year. Yes, they had a wonderful season until the big man got hurt. But what we're talking about when you talk about television opportunities, we're talking about brand. And that's where IU is still unbelievably strong. They are a blue blood as far as brand, as far as the desire of TV to have them. So that's the decision that IU has to make moving forward. Does he want to participate and sort of essentially prop up the biggest event in the state each year, or does it want to take its brand to more of a national stage? And I understand the argument for both. I don't think there is a wrong choice, but you are making a choice. By playing in the Crossroads Classic, you take a marquee national event away because it takes away a date on your schedule. So do you want to prop up the big event for the state, help out your other state schools, or do you want to take your brand and put it in more of a national showcase? That's the decision for IU moving forward as it relates to, do you continue the Crossroads Classic or not when it comes time for that decision?
Interesting stuff from Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com. I've got one more question about the team right now, and then I would like to get into a couple recruiting things with you before we let you go. Got a tweet earlier, and I've had other people hit me at the New Albany Floyd Central game on Friday and just generally throughout the season, especially recently it seems. But what is the rap on Romeo's shooting hand? I've had a lot of people ask me that. Someone tweeted me earlier this morning and wanted me to ask you, and so I'll pass that along. Any insight as to what that is on his shooting hand?
Yeah, my understanding is, and I don't know if I'm getting this exactly right, so don't write this down in pen, because it's been a little while since I asked about that. So I'm going off of memory here. But he hit the hand and kind of like bent back the thumb and forefinger a little bit. So there's just some like strain in the hand. So the wrap, as you can tell, it goes around the hand and sort of around the base of the thumb. But the extension of the thumb and the extension of the forefinger are free. So I think that's what it is. It was described. I think strain was the word that was actually used, if I'm remembering right. But anyway, it's not supposed to prevent him from being able to dribble or be able to shoot. It's just supposed to try to give some support there to that area of the hand and then the ligaments and everything right around the thumb on his shooting hand.
Jeff, I want to get to some recruiting stuff as well. Probably nobody more well-versed to talk about Keon Brooks' recruitment than you, and you've interviewed him a number of times. You've sat down with his family and he for video interviews, lots of features over the years, updates on his recruiting. I'm curious, I think you talked to him Saturday night after the Center Grove-La Lemire game as well. What anything change with him? You have any kind of... obviously, I know he and Trace are close, and I'm sure that is a factor. It has to be, I would think, in his decision, which could be forthcoming. But any change in his talk or the feeling you get from him when you interview or see him now that Jackson Davis is officially in the fold?
I think, you know, we got a chance to sit down and talk at the Hendricks County shootout a couple days after Jackson Davis made it formal, and it was funny. Because he said on a scale of 1 to 10, it would be a 0 on the amount of surprise that Trace went to IU. So Keon pretty much knew. And I think I can take the phrase pretty much out of there. He knew it was happening. The only question was, when is Trace going to announce? I think that's been the only question in Keon's mind since, I would say, at least July. And it might be even before that. But so it's kind of like, even though Trace Jackson Davis only recently made it public, Keon has known for a while, or at least felt he knew, I'll phrase it that way, that that's where Trace was going to go. So they obviously talked. Trace is working on him. Excuse me. Armon Franklin, the other Indiana current signee, the guard from Indianapolis Cathedral, is working on him. Trace also talks to Rob Fennessy, a reasonable amount, IU current freshman point guard. So there's a number of conversations going on. And those things are factors. But the reality is, friends recruiting friends, while it's a great storyline and it's interesting because it's sort of like the human component of it, it's more of a background level of impact, because the bigger thing is Keon's going to look at the schools and go, okay, what system makes the best sense for me in my development? What system makes the best sense for where would I be used on the court? What team has the most minutes available for me at my most natural position? What coaching staff am I just most comfortable with? Which campus am I most comfortable with? All those kind of things. Those are going to matter more than, you know, do I want to go play with guys I know really well, or do I want to go kind of have some new teammates? You know, even look at Armon Franklin. He had a number of guys who he was close with who were going to Purdue. Isaiah Thompson from Zionsville, who's been a friend of Armon's for years. Mason Gillis from Newcastle, same thing. Those guys were at Purdue on Armon's visit up there. They were talking to him all the time about, hey, let's put this all together, you know, be a really good backcourt, et cetera, et cetera. And Armon decided that Indiana made the most sense to him from a standpoint of basketball, from a standpoint of coaching, from the standpoint of what will an IU degree and the IU alumni base mean over the course of your life, especially when basketball is over. How much of an impact could the big IU alumni base have on job connections and those kind of things? So, you know, Armon made the decision that was best for him, even though he went away from his friends. So it's not always, in fact, it's often, you know, really overplay the whole friends recruiting friends thing, even though it's a fun story because they're talented kids and they talk about wanting to play together and everybody enjoys reading that. And, you know, I've written it as much as anybody because the kids actually, they talk about it and it's a legit story. But I just don't think it has the impact as much as sometimes I think fans assume that it does. It's more of a secondary type situation, but it is helpful. And certainly I think the big thing with Keon Brooks and Trace Jackson Davis is they play really well together. I know I remember being up at Fort Wayne, the first practice for the Indy Heat Gym Rats program. Trace Jackson Davis and Keon Brooks are going to play two sessions in the morning, two sessions in the afternoon. These guys have never played together. So I wanted to go up there. I know it sounds probably silly that I went to an AU practice, but I did. And I wanted to see, okay, how is this going to work? I want to see what this looks like. And it was really interesting how well they played together right from the get-go, how much they could pass to each other, how much they both kind of really quickly with a little bit of, you know, a nod or a, you know, a little head bobble or just kind of like a, you know, just a little bit of a look. They were like, yeah, okay. You know, the communication, nonverbal communication, kind of got going right away, and they set up pick and rolls for each other. They played really well together. So I think the fact that they play together really well, now that might actually have more of an impact than just their friends. They know each other, because when you actually can play well with somebody, that can be more appealing. And I think right now, Keon probably is somewhere around a month away from a decision. Could be under a month, could be a little more than a month, but somewhere in that ballpark. And he's kind of coming down to, he's got to sit down with his parents and a few other people and go through some things. But, you know, I think it's going to be within a month. And it's always worth keeping in mind the player schedules, because La Lu, they leave here on December 16th to go to Hawaii for the big invitational down there. They come back, then they have an event up in the South Dakotas for several days. Then they come back and they have actual Christmas break, and then they go to the Cancer Research Classic in Wheeling, West Virginia, and then come back. I think right now they're scheduled to come back around January 5th or 6th. So he does have a lot of travel involved. Now, that doesn't mean you can't still have conversations when you're traveling, but just generally speaking, it's worth keeping in mind he does have a busy schedule. But, you know, Indiana is in as strong of a position as it's been with Keon Brooks. And it's really, a big credit to Archie Miller, to Bruiser Flint, to Ed Schilling, those guys who've been the primary drivers of this, that IU has gone from a couple years ago, chances of landing Keon Brooks were zero, to here we sit in December of 2018, and Indiana's chances of landing Keon Brooks are very real. Not going to sit here and say it's definite, because it's not. But is there a real chance, more than just, oh, he's taking a look? Yeah, there's a real chance that Indiana lands Keon Brooks.
Great insight from Jeff Rabjohns, Peaks.com. If he is able, and I'm talking about he is an Archie Miller, if he's able to land Keon Brooks, he's already, I think anyone would admit, fans of Purdue, other in-state schools, high school coaches without a player that's been recruited by IU right now, Indiana's taken the state by storm. It started with the 2018 class. Romeo was the top of the mountain there. And then Trace Jackson Davis and Armon Franklin in the fold for 19. And if Brooks happens, what type of statement does that send out to the state and some of these younger players? I spent some time earlier in the show talking about Anthony Leal and Christian Lander, a little update on their recruiting. But what type of statement does that send to those guys and other young players in the state and really even beyond the border that Indiana has come in with a new staff and in 2 years landed a unbelievable number of talented players that all happen to be from the state of Indiana?
Yeah, I think the statement that's already been made by Archie Miller and his staff is, if you're a good player in the state of Indiana, we're going to come watch you. We're going to come recruit you. We're going to come recruit you hard. We want you to come play with us. And I think he did that from the jump. He got down there to New Albany right away to see Romeo Langford. He hit other places around the state. McCutcheon to go see Finney, South Bend to go see Demezi Anderson, Center Grove to see Trace Jackson Davis. At the time, Fort Wayne, where Keon Brooks was playing. And I remember, fall open gym period of 2017. Trying to remember exactly the sequence, but in one day they started up top, and I think it was they hit Isaiah Stewart at Lalamere, Demezi Anderson at South Bend, Robert Finney at McCutcheon, Trace Jackson Davis at Center Grove, Romeo Langford at New Albany. And when you hit that many key players, and I think I have that sequence right, those are the players they saw. But when you hit that many key players from the state on the opening day of the fall recruiting period, you are making a statement that this state is really important, and yeah, damn it, we're serious about this. Those kinds of things are really, really, I mean, that's as big of a statement as you can make in state, hitting that many guys in one day. But with the way open gyms are scheduled, I don't know if you could have hit any more guys. I think that was the absolute max you possibly could have hit in one day. And the fact that they've landed guys, the way they've recruited players, the way they've gone after guys, and even some of the guys who didn't stay in state, like Aaron Henry ended up at Michigan State, Indiana recruited him, but it came down to a standpoint of there was that time period, that 36 to 40-hour period where IU, three kids committed IU, and Aaron Henry just sort of was the guy who didn't pull the trigger sooner than Demezi Anderson or Jerome Hunter, and that's kind of what that came down to. But Archie Miller said at the beginning, his opening press conference, his recruiting philosophy was inside out, and he's followed through on that. He said at Huber's a couple years ago, I can't talk about recruiting, but I know where New Albany is. That, to me, that quote, that shows everybody where his focus is. And they've not only focused on the state, they've succeeded. And I think that's a really big thing. And when you can get this many good players from a state that produces talent with the regularity that Indiana does, it can have a significant impact on your program. Certainly players like to see Indiana high school players at IU. And that's a key part of it. That is, just from a cultural standpoint, just from the vibe that people have about the team, when there are a number of kids from Indiana who are in Indiana on their chest, that matters. The bigger impact is these guys can really play and help you win games. And to get guys like this, nobody's going to lock down the borders of Indiana. There's too many good programs in-state, and there's too many programs that come recruit the state. I've always said this is one of the most over-recruited states in the country.
Yes.
Because so many colleges just think, okay, if it's 50-50, I like this kid from Wyoming, I like this kid from Indiana, I'm going after the kid from Indiana. And, you know, you have so many kids who get a lot of attention in the state of Indiana, so many people hear about them. Colleges are going to come into this state and recruit it hard, and it's overly recruited. And that's not necessarily bad for the players, but there's more competition for players in the state of Indiana per player that's really getting recruited than about anywhere else. It's certainly up there among the most overly recruited places ever. And you've been around long enough. You know what it's like. You know how many colleges are coming after various players at various levels. So it's going to be tough. But what and that, because it's more difficult than other states, I think that shows even more pointedly the accomplishment that Archie Miller and his staff have actually achieved by being able to land this many good players in a short span of time.
Jeff Rabjohns, Pigs.com. You can follow him at Jeff Rabjohns on Twitter. Man, we covered a lot of ground today. Lots of stuff about the current team, lots of recruiting insight. Really wanted to get your take on some of those things, including the Keon Brooks recruitment. And as usual, great job. Great to catch back up with you.
Thanks, man. Always good talking with you. Sorry some of my answers were a little on the long side today. I don't know what happened.
No, we love
long-winded today.
We love it. We love it. Jeff Rabjohns, Pigs.com. Jeff, thanks so much. We'll do it again next week.
Hey, man. My pleasure, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Absolutely. Jeff Rabjohns, great stuff. Covered a lot of ground there. Lots about the current team, lots about recruiting. Very interesting time with IU basketball. There's no question about it. With the team now, you know, a two-loss team, a team that's showed a lot of promise, a team that's had to deal with some adversity as far as injuries go, and, of course, always interesting to follow Romeo Langford and see what his next move is and what his next maybe high-point game will be. But every bit as important to all that going on right now off the court is the recruiting, and is Trace Jackson Davis coming in the fold? And will Keon Brooks follow him as the next signee, the next commitment to the 2019 class? When you're talking about building a program for the future under Archie Miller, some of the things on the court have been great to, you know, put some cement blocks down with that side of things, but the recruiting stuff is really off and going, and that will affect the future of IU basketball, not next season and not just the season after that, but potentially for years to come with some of these what I call landmark recruits that Archie has had. And it all got started with a couple of those 2018 guys, including Romeo Langford. That's going to wrap things up for this Wednesday edition of the program. Don't forget, you can podcast us if you miss a live show or the replay at 3 o'clock here on the Big X. SoundCloud, it's a free app, or you can just point your browser directly to soundcloud.com/Hoosier Report. Again, soundcloud.com/Hoosier Report. You can also find us on Apple Podcast. Just type in the Hoosier Report. If you would, leave us a rating and a positive review as well. That'll help us reach others that might be interested in a podcast, a radio show about IU and Southern Indiana sports. We'll have a show for you tomorrow, obviously 11 o'clock. We're back every day this week. And, of course, the Indiana Hoosiers Saturday right here on the Big X as well. That's going to wrap things up for this Wednesday show. I'll talk to you tomorrow at 11 o'clock right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.